Please be seated. Between one side and the other, a chasm has been fixed. One side of that deep, dark chasm, there is feasting and music. The party never stops. The tables are set. The company is wonderful. Over there in the corner is a poetry reading with the poet herself. And across the way, you can taste caviar from all over the world. And just through there are soft beds with big, fluffy pillows that get made up for you every morning without you having to lift a finger. And there's this big oak table where you can sit and everyone will listen to what you say and nod and agree that your ideas are awesome. And there's the other side of the chasm. It's dark over there. A lot of the lights have burned out. It is hot and stuffy. It's like breathing smelly soup. And there's not much to eat. You'll have to fight tooth and nail for what little there is. The roof leaks. The floors are dirty. And the neighbor's hungry baby never stops crying. You can sit and watch the sparkling parties up on the hill as long as you want, but there's no way across that canyon. No bridge or rope or ladder. And no matter how loud you cry, the music and the laughter drowns out your shout. Between one side and the other, a chasm has been fixed. But not by Father Abraham, not even by God. We human beings have dug this one ourselves. It's the world that Jesus walked between the rich man, this royal man in his fine purple robes, and the people like Lazarus that Jesus ate and talked and lived with every day. And unfortunately, that's the world where you and I still live, though most of us live on the pleasant side of that chasm, on the other side of the chasm from where the rabbi we are trying so hard to follow lived. And the chasm is growing wider. Slowly, so slowly, that we have hardly even noticed as more and more slip quietly down into that dark land, and hope there grows more and more dim, and the bright lights on the hill grow brighter, and the music louder, and the feast more extravagant. Now, our nameless ruler in the gospel today is not painted as an evil man. According to Jesus, he's just blind. He has lived so long in a land with a great chasm splitting it down the middle that he doesn't even see Lazarus at his gate, hoping for a few crumbs. Caught up in his own world, he just doesn't see. And Lazarus? Lazarus has lived so long in a world of deep darkness that it never even occurs to him to call out for help. The chasm between him and the world of plenty is that deep and wide. And so they both die, and they are still divided in the next life. Our rich ruler still can't see Lazarus. even in death and agony, he can't see that the man out there with Father Abraham is a person. The chasm in his own heart is so deep and so wide that instead of calling, "Brother Lazarus, help me," he calls across, "Father Abraham, send that servant to help me." Even in death, Lazarus isn't his brother. He's not a fellow child of Abraham. He's a tool, a means to an end. Listening as the rich man shouts his request past Lazarus, I can feel that chasm widening. And I can picture Abraham shaking his head sadly as he watches it happen. That divide is real, that huge chasm. There is a myth, a very powerful myth in our culture, that claims that that chasm that runs through our world is easy to cross. One just needs enough gumption or a good work ethic, or I don't know if you heard this growing up, I certainly did, to pull yourself up by your bootstraps, right? See, Jesus knows something that I think we all know. I have never yet met a bootstrap that would let me jump the Grand Canyon. Now, it would be really, really easy for those of us sitting here today to believe that myth, because it would be comfortable. It would exonerate us from a whole lot of really hard work. Many of us have never walked in that dark place where hunger is real. Some of us have dwelt on its edges a time or two, but we never really got lost in its alleyways or trapped in its prisons. And always we had some subtle bridges leading us back into the light and the warmth. By virtue of our race or our education or our parents, our neighborhoods, our communities like this, all of our unacknowledged privilege. But statistics tell us that that chasm is growing wider and wider. It's gobbling up more and more along the edges. All those nice little houses at the outskirts of that pleasant land. And so the light and the celebration goes further away. Chasm grows wider and deeper. The rocks and the pounding waves at its base become more violent and frightening. And here's the thing. As that happens, the things that we will do to stay on the good side of the canyon, they grow more desperate, less kind, more singularly focused on ourselves. And like that rich ruler, we grow blind, unable to see Lazarus right here among us. Father Abraham shakes his head and watches the canyon widen. But there's another way. See, there is a whole other world. It's the one that Mary sang about at the beginning of Luke. It's the one Jesus preached in his sermon on the plain. The kingdom of God sounds fantastic and impossible. In our world today, quite frankly, it sounds like a cute fairy story. But it's not for the real world. It has variably been called communism or socialism or just plain pie in the sky, unrealistic thinking. But see, here's what I can't get around. We call ourselves children of God. And we say that so often, I think we've lost how crazy that sounds. children of God. What business do we have talking about realistic anyway? We are people of a dream God has been dreaming for us for a couple hundred thousand years now. And God dreams in these bright, fantastic colors, colors that make our windows on even the brightest day look dull and dark and boring. In God's dream, there is a great chasm. In God's dream, we all stop looking at those banquet tables and those feather beds and those fancy cars and that little bit we're scrambling for, and we stop looking at the hunger and the dirt and those crashing, frightening waves deep in the chasm, and we start looking at each other. In God's dream, we look up from our scrambling and we give a jolt of surprise. Because in God's dreams, we squint and we shade our eyes and we peer across and say, "Hey, Brother Lazarus." In God's dream, we see each other, maybe for the first time. The person sitting next to you, the person behind you, in front of you, the gentleman sitting on the courthouse steps, President of Baylor, Mr. Dell down in Austin, the folks who live just across the river. In God's dream, we see each other and we're not means to an end or competition. We're brothers and sisters, and we are one big messed up family who will never stop arguing, but that's okay, because that's the fun of it anyway. Who wants to always agree with each other? But when God dreams, we are tossing ropes and ladders and bridges and whatever we can lay our hands upon across that chasm, and we are running across to meet each other, and we are throwing one heck of a party, because we've finally gotten the family back together again. The big, messy, crazy, goofy family of God. And we've tossed sleeping bags down on the floor and we're passing around big loaves of bread and hot trays of barbecue. And we're making sure that the hungriest take what they need first. In God's dream, we start tossing all the things that separate us from each other and from God down into that chasm, and building bridges like crazy until there's no chasm left. Just a big, wide plain. And our children's children's children look at those bridges on the plain and scratch their heads and wonder. We are children born of a dream, born of the love of God, built for love, made for one another. Dare we dream with God, each one of us? Dare we dream as a community, as a city, as a nation, even as the whole world? Dare we let go of what is realistic and possible and look, really look for each other and for the way together we can help dream the dream that built this whole messy universe.